Hey guys, it's Albert. Normally in this spot, I sort of preview the show. The only way I can properly preview the show this week is to tell you, just give it a listen because things are going to go haywire in the middle of it. We're going to break down free agency. I'm going to get to your questions in the six pack. Let's go. All right, welcome back in. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We're not through free agency yet, but the first wave has hit. Full disclosure, we're recording here on Tuesday at noon, so more could happen before you guys get this in your feeds for your Wednesday morning commute. And I want to start by kind of taking the 50,000-foot view of this whole thing and everything that's happened over the course of the last 24 hours. And really, you know, we always make a big deal out of these days, and it's almost like, you know, it's like a stepping on the banana peel type thing for all of us, I think, because we look at this deal and that deal, and this team looks so much better, and that team looks so much better, and wow, like, look what they did. They're really serious. And if you really step back and you really look at the names, it's a lot of them are guys that maybe the general public hadn't even heard of going back to September and October. Doesn't mean they're not good players. Doesn't mean there aren't fines out there. But, you know, I just there's really not a lot of history outside of maybe the Broncos in 2014 with Aqib Talib and DeMarcus Ware and TJ Ward. Outside of like a couple free agent classes, there aren't real examples of teams using this part of the offseason to build a champion. And I think that there are some teams that thought about this in a smart way. Now, I can bring up the Jets, and we're going to talk about the Jets later. But one thing that you saw the Jets do over the weekend that I think sort of signaled where a lot of this was going for a lot of teams was dealing for Kelechi Osemele. And they bring him in. They get him at basically a late-round pick swap. So they move a pick in the fifth and sixth round down 20, 30 slots. And he's in there for about $22 million over the next 2 years. Well, why do you do that? If you're the Jets, you do that because the best guards in the market were probably Ramon Foster and Roger Saffold, who are both older than Osemele, and both would cost you guaranteed money to bring him in. And then you look at the trade between the Giants and the Browns, and the Browns go and get Olivier Vernon at $15.5 million for this year and $15.5 million for next year. Well, what does that mean? Well, his money's not guaranteed either. And if you look at what Preston Smith got at $13 million, you look at what Za'Darius Smith got at $16.5 million, you look at what Trey Flowers got at $17 or $18 million a year, it's, I mean, for the Browns, it's like, okay, like we're going to bring in a guy on non-guaranteed money. We're going to date him for the next 2 years instead of having to marry him. And, same goes for the Giants, bringing in Kevin Zeitler, where, again, you know, would you rather have Kevin Zeitler for the next couple of years? You know, on a non-guaranteed contract, or would you rather roll the dice on an older guard like a Saffold or a Foster? And I'll bring in Jenny and Connor now. I look at it and I see some teams, and the reason I said I hate to throw the Jets in there is because they followed that up by going bananas. Right? Like they followed that up by just making it rain. But you look at what the Giants did, you look at what the Browns did, and you sort of see that fiscal responsibility that some teams are showing, where it's like, you know, this class isn't really that great. Like, there isn't. Like, we'd rather just, you know, like give me that veteran over there, or that veteran over there who got rich a couple off seasons ago, and I'll get him in here on a non-guaranteed contract, and I'll maintain my flexibility. I don't need to participate in the free agent market.
Yeah, you know, for all the talk about that this wasn't a great class, which it isn't a great class, we still have the usual frenzy. So it just proves that there were teams with a lot of cap space that were willing to spend. But I agree. I mean, like a player-for-player trade like the Browns and Giants did, like that was like a win-win. That was a rare win-win. You know, sometimes, you know, you don't always see – I mean – certainly the Antonio Brown trade was not a win-win. So, that made a lot of sense, right? Teams, you know, swapping players, it filled a need for both sides. But, you know, then this week comes and you see these, you know, commensurate with the rising salary cap, these big deals being handed out by teams that are desperate.
And again, we're going to get to the Jets here, but I thought it was so interesting, like, when news starts breaking this morning on C.J. Mosley. And we're going to talk about Mosley and Anthony Barr in a minute, but you look at the 2014 draft, right? And you see Anthony Barr going in the top 10, and you see Mosley going, I think, 16th or 17th overall. And then you see what the Jets did. They drafted Calvin Pryor. And it's like, that's why they have the cap space in the first place, right? Like, they have all this cap space in the first place because they missed on draft picks and they have no one to pay. And then you look at the teams that drafted those guys, Minnesota and Baltimore. the reason why they don't have the room to keep those guys is because they drafted better, you know? And so in that sort of way, I think like you look at the 2014 draft class and it was like, it's all right there for us, what's happening here.
What's really amazing to me is that there aren't owners or, I guess, team presidents or someone that kind of sees what's going on, right? Because how many GMs survived this offseason by the skin of their teeth, right? That was right. The story, that all the coaches were getting fired and all the GMs were allowed to stay. And what's the hallmark of a GM that's on his way out the door? This happened with Jerry Reese a couple years ago, Jason Light. You spend like you're not going to have that money tomorrow because you might not have it.
Right.
And, you know, if I'm an owner or if I'm a team president, like the only other people that can oversee this, how do you not recognize that pattern and say, this guy's doing this to save his job? It's probably not going to work. It almost never works. And right. So when he leaves and I replace him, the next guy's going to take 2 years to clean this up. And, you know, I think it's just this perpetual madness in the NFL where, like the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again to no success.
You know, but, like you just saying that, like, there's like this, I guess it's a cycle, right? You draft poorly. You get cap space because you can't, because you don't want to pay the guys you drafted, and then you try to save your job by spending on somebody else's draft picks.
It's unbelievable. But like, why owners aren't looking at this and saying, no, like, don't do this, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, because then we're probably going to replace you anyway. To me, it's kind of one of the biggest, most unbelievable things about this period.
Okay, we're going to get into the weeds of all of this now. And we're going to go pick by signing by signing, some of the bigger signings, team by team here. And really, like, we need to remind everybody again, we're recording this on Tuesday at noon. So if something big happens and it's not in here, that's why. I just want to at least be upfront with people about that. And to me, I mean, maybe the highest impact move of the last 24 hours, I don't even know there's that much of a question about it. Because it's a quarterback, and you generally don't see starting quarterbacks moving on the market. We saw a little bit last year, but before then, there isn't a great history for that. News topic number one: Nick Foles agreed to a 4-year, $88 million deal with upside to $102 million with Jacksonville, where he'll be reunited with Jags offensive coordinator John DeFilippo. Sorry, Connor, that we didn't have the time to get your wording in there for you to position that the way you wanted to position it, but I'll let you lead off.
Well, here's what someone told me about the full signing, that it, just food for thought thing that I think is interesting. Just pairing him with John DeFilippo doesn't mean, like, a lot of people are saying, okay, you're putting him in that offense that where they went and won the Super Bowl, you know, and this is the same thing, so he's going to be good. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, the Eagles were so far ahead of the curve in 2018, offensively, analytically, you know, institutionally,
that
was an offense that people weren't prepared to stop at that point, and now they are. You know what I'm saying? And Foles' two best seasons were sort of like that, right? 2013, when he had the third highest quarterback rating of all time, that was early in the Chip Kelly era where, again, teams didn't know how to stop that, and he just happened to be there. And when he's been in a conventional offense, albeit really bad conventional offenses, he's been a replacement-level quarterback, just a guy. And so while I think it was a good move for Jacksonville because you have to try to maximize the remainder of this roster, I would be cautiously optimistic if I were a Jaguars fan.
I've got two thoughts on this. My first one is, wouldn't it concern you guys a little bit if you were the only one bidding on a player? Like, well, if you knew you were the only one bidding on a player, would that concern you just a little bit?
The only reason in this case I would say it wouldn't is because most of the other teams have their quarterback situation settled, or they're sort of in a different position like Miami, which is not going to pay a veteran quarterback at this point in time, right? So there aren't that many. They're just
Washington, though. I mean,
Washington,
Denver could have had him as a free agent. Denver could have looked at him as a free agent. They decided to go to Flacco instead,
right?
And give up a draft pick to get him. Like, I don't know. It just concerned me a little bit. Like, I think, if you're the only one on the market, like, it's just like it would make me at least like hit the pause button and say, wait a second.
I mean, I guess it's less of a gamble because DeFilippo knows him so well.
Right.
I mean, it's not like it's not like Kirk Cousins where the Vikings, you know, didn't know him that well,
right?
I mean, before he visited, right? What was their interaction with him? Cousins was signed with the Vikings.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have much knowledge of him, did they?
The Vikings?
Yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't like an obvious connection.
No, there wasn't
like an obvious connection that I'm forgetting, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, in this case, it's like at least you're paying for, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
You mean, it's not like you're doling out a lot of money for a guy that you don't have any understanding of. I totally understand Connor's point. You know, I also think that the years in, you know, with the Rams, with Fisher, shouldn't be held against Foles.
Yep.
It's like an unusual situation, like the Super Bowl MVP that we're not sure that he's a franchise quarterback.
It's a weird situation.
It's very unusual.
It's strange because we've seen there's been like such highs and lows. And like it's – I think he's like the perfect example of like what most quarterbacks are. And I think most quarterbacks are really dependent on their situation and what's around them. You know, like coaching, play, like as much as it's the most important position on the field – it's also, I think, the most dependent on other people position on the field. Like, I think you're very, very, like, unless you're Brady or Manning or Roger, like what Peyton Manning used to be, not Eli, or Rogers, like, unless you're one of those guys, I think luck has been in that category off and on over the last few years. Unless you're one of those guys, like, where you can lift people up around you, you really are dependent on what on what you're given. And I think that that's sort of what Foles is. My second thing on this, like, it just... it feels to me like the Jaguars are still all in, right? Like they pick up Calais Campbell's option. He's an older player. They restructure Darius. Yeah, they let go of Malik Jackson, but they had to do some things from a cap standpoint. It does feel to me like this is another sign that the Jags are still all in with the core that they have.
I mean, you could say that Foles is someone who does elevate the play of people around him, because that certainly seemed to be the case in Philadelphia. I mean, not, obviously not the same category as like a Brady, but right. I mean, it did seem like he had very good relationships with all of his teammates. And for whatever reason, it was sort of this, you know, ingredient that made them believe they could, you know.
I mean, I agree with that, but I just don't like, does he make the players around him better? Like, Brady, like, indisputably makes the players around him better. Like, Rodgers indisputably makes the play. Like, the thing is, like, I think sometimes we look at that category. There aren't very many guys in that category, period. I mean, I don't think there's ever more than, like, two or three quarterbacks in that category in the league, period. So I think there are very few players that are in that category on a year-to-year basis that are really, like, consistently elevating the people around him. I think everybody else is sort of dependent on their situation, and Foles is in that group.
I think a little bit to Jenny's point, though, anecdotally, there was a lot of evidence of like this, like Foles hysteria, like when he, even in the locker room, when he took back over the job from Carson, there
was
like lighting of the candles and like all that kind of stuff where they were like, okay, like there was a comfortableness in rallying around him. And it's, I don't know, I think it's one of those things where everyone's freaking out about the $22 million because the Jaguars were kind of bidding against themselves there. But I think it was a move that you had to make. Like, I think we'd kill them more for not making this move and doing what? I mean
maybe, I don't
maybe
know.
Getting
like,
Ryan
I guess,
Tannehill.
I guess your options are Ryan Tannehill, Tyrod Taylor, Teddy Bridgewater, or trading for Flacco, right? Like, I guess that would be it.
And of those, I would certainly have taken Nick Foles.
I think because you know what you're getting, because you've got a coach in the building, to your point, Jenny, like, because you've got a coach in the building who's got like the institutional knowledge of having worked with the guy and understands exactly what he's getting, understands exactly how to use him, understands exactly how he'll fit. Like, I don't know, the ceiling's tremendously high, and that sounds freaking ridiculous because he won the Super Bowl MVP. But
all you needed, it feels safe. You need slightly above replacement level quarterback play in that offense. It's a ground control offense. They want their defense to make the plays. You need slightly above replacement level, and that's something that I think you know Nick Foles can do.
Right. And you bring him into that locker room, which was like super fractured last year, and the defense didn't believe in the offense.
That's a good point.
And you bring in Foles, and you say, this guy won a Super Bowl. Like, you know he can do it. So at least, like, if he has a bad day, you're like, you know what? At least I know that this guy has, like, been on a big stage.
And let's call it whatever. That locker room's full of a-holes. So, like, that locker room.
Dave Gettleman, high a-hole quotient.
That locker room. The Jaguars locker room is full of, like, a-holes probably I'll use another A-word. Alphas. There's a lot of alphas in the Jaguars locker room, right? And so I think having, like, somebody who can navigate that like a Foles makes sense. God, you're smirking at me.
I'm just thinking, you know, some of the nicknames, you know, this guy that has a lot of confidence going in, you know.
Alpha. Alpha's the one that I always think of. I don't know.
You know, Nick, I mean, you know, a lot of confidence.
Oh, Nick.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of confidence.
Yep, a lot of confidence. Yep. A lot of
energy. A-holes and BDE.
A lot of energy. A lot of energy. All right. Jenny, Connor, who wants to take news topic number two? Speaking of a-holes.
All right. The Antonio Brown saga came to an end over the weekend with the Steelers sending the 31-year-old to Oakland for third and fifth round picks. The Raiders will add $11.2 million to the 3 years left in his contract and guarantee over $30 million of it. This was just a stunning, you know, result. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you wrote it that the day after it happened, or the hours after it happened, Albert, just that it was about the money. But it's really remarkable that he essentially got his way. You know, that he got out of Pittsburgh, he got more money, more guaranteed mm-hmm. money, and it was a power play that really only a handful of players, I think, could make. You have to be viewed as this generational receiver or generational talent at your position to be able to stage that. I know there was a lot of discussion, you know, will this spark others to do the same? But few have the leverage that Antonio Brown has. But it's yeah. stunning. I mean, to leave the Steelers, and it's stunning to me that the Steelers made this move.
Well, the more I've thought about this, the more it's like this plays into guaranteed money, right? And so guys sign big contracts. And we've seen a lot of big contracts this week, right? So normally those contracts are really what? Like 2 or 3 year deals with team options on the end, right? You'll hear like Landon Collins, 6 year deal. Like that's really a 2 year deal with like 4 team options. Like here's what I wonder, Jenny. Does this mean now for other players, when you're looking at it, right, when they get out of the guaranteed money, because that's the point where Antonio Brown was, when they get out of the guaranteed money, does that mean is this going to be the new way of doing it, where it's like, oh my God, now I'm in a situation where all my guaranteed money is gone, the team has power over me, so how do I fix this? Well, my current team isn't going to give me a new deal, so I'm going to ask for a trade. And then when I ask for a trade, and if I can get my way here, if they have me talking to other teams, I'm going to say I'm not going there unless I get more guaranteed money. You know what I'm saying? Like once you're past the point where the guaranteed money's up, and this is like where, you know, like it's just the NFL is different in that, you know, their contracts aren't fully guaranteed. Once you get past the point where the guaranteed money's like run out, like our player's going to say, well, shoot, like now I got to do something. And the thing that they can do is ask for a trade.
It was masterful.
I mean, it really was. I mean,
it was amazing.
I don't know if it was intentional, but if it was, I mean, right down to the blonde mustache,
which is gone now,
which tells me, like, and I tweeted this earlier. I was sort of joking, but I'm sort of not. Like, does he dye his mustache blonde to make the Steelers think he might be crazy enough to do just about anything? And then the minute he's traded, it's gone.
You know, right? like
that dude is just crazy enough to do just about anything. Maybe we shouldn't mess with him. Maybe we should trade him. It's not impossible, right? Like, you wouldn't put the chances of that like strategy at 0%, would you?
It's not impossible. I don't think so. I think it's actually probably likely.
Yeah. I mean, it was like how hard was it to look at him seriously over the last, like, seriously, like how hard was it to like take him seriously looking at him that way? Like, what's going on with that dude? Right, so
I loved it. I loved every minute of it, and I'm so glad that the playbook is out there now.
I really hope it was intentional, guys. I really hope it was intentional.
Want Odell to do this next year, and Mike Evans to do it in a few years, and I just want the Julio Jones, like
maybe
just,
the blonde mustache will become like the sign of it.
Yeah, the sign, right? Yeah. Now, how would all of these players look with mustaches? That's a good question.
Odell, with the blonde thing, and then the blonde mustache would look unbelievable.
Like if Julio Jones,
unbelievable is one descriptor.
Julio Jones should show up to OTAs with like a blonde handlebar mustache.
It's like the universal sign for I'm forcing my way out of here. Yeah. But I think the other angle of this is, how about that sustained Raiders rebuild, huh? Yeah, right. Wow, this is such a plan. This is proof to me. I thought about this on the train the whole way in. I think that I am the only person that's mad about it now still, and the reason that I'm mad about it is because they just basically think that people will believe anything, right? When you cut Khalil Mack and you trade Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper, you're saying, okay, we're digging in for this rebuild. You know, this is going to be a process, 5, 6, 7 years, you know, and then, okay, here's this shiny object over here because that wasn't working. And now we're going to get Antonio Brown. We're going to pay a god-awful amount of money for Trent Brown who, like, okay.
Like, could show up at 410 pounds in a month.
Yeah, let's make this guy the highest paid tackle in the NFL after he spent a year with the best offensive line coach in the league. I mean, like, what's going on?
I don't know
here?
What's going on here. I mean, all I can think of is that John Gruden cannot stand losing, And like last year was hard on him, and now it's like we're going to do whatever we need to do to win right now, come hell or high water. We're going to – and look, you can't – like I think Mayock did a nice job of like – I mean this is sort of in a way a creative use of the cap space for the Raiders because it's like, all right, like no one's willing to trade for – like the reason so many teams dropped out of this wasn't the draft pick compensation. It was – like, I'm not giving that dude a new contract. Like, I'm not tearing up his contract, making him the highest paid player in the league. So, in a way,
yeah.
Like, the Mayock bought, like, his way into not having to give up those picks, right?
Right.
Like,
it's smart because, in that sense, it doesn't interfere with the rebuild because you're right. Just giving up third and fifth round picks.
Right.
So, it's not like you're giving up precious draft capital.
So, Mike Mayock smart, John Gruden not? Is that what you're saying?
If you're going to have to put me on the record, yeah. No, but I think this was always going to be an interesting balancing act between the two of these guys because Mayock for years on NFL Network and any time that he talked about the draft was all about a certain way of building the team
yep.
that always flied in the face historically of how Gruden did it, which is it sort of feels like what they're doing now, which is, okay, let's develop something. That's not working. Let's just sign a bunch of 30-year-old guys and hope that we make the Super Bowl. So I think we're kind of seeing a balancing act between the two.
Remember, John Gruden didn't get to the Super Bowl, but the team got to the Super Bowl the year after he left with like super old Jerry Rice, super old Tim Brown. Like he's been down this road before. This is sort of his model, right? So I don't know. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. They've got four picks in the top 35. Who knows what they're going to do with it? All right, Jenny, news item number 3.
The Jets opened the tampering period with a flourish, reaching agreements with...
sure, I didn't write this? This is good.
That was good.
You like that?
Reaching agreements with Jameson Crowder, Anthony Barr, and C.J. Mosley, quickly taking advantage of the 9-figure cap space total they entered the offseason with. My first thought was, they really thought nothing of their defensive personnel, right?
Right.
I mean, they clearly felt like not... that they...
Well, Darren Lee and Avery Williamson,
yeah.
And like they spend on linebackers now. I will say I think some things could potentially change here. We'll leave that alone for right now. I think some things could potentially change. But as it stands, it's been out there, right? Like with Crowder and Barr and Mosley, I look at it as, like you guys said, Mike Maccagnan kind of in a position where he's probably fighting for his job, right? They've built to this where they've got all this cap space. And, I mean, to some degree, this is what the Rams and Eagles did, right? Like, where they draft a quarterback, and then they immediately like in year two, which is what the Rams did when they, when they hired Sean McVay. It's what the Eagles did in year two with Wentz. Like, this is sort of what those two teams did. I'm not saying they're going to go win the Super Bowl now, but the Jets are sort of following that model where it's like, okay, we've got 3 years of opportunity here. We've got a 3-year window to really spend while we still got our quarterback on an affordable contract. So we're going to go and do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just it's what we talked about before, right? You shouldn't really have this much, but if you're going to do it, do it,
Yeah.
The Mosley thing scares me because that, I think that I looked up something right before I came in. They're paying more for C.J. Mosley than the Texans are paying for J.J. Watt, which again was a contract that was signed in a different time,
right?
Or Jadeveon Clowney, I think, on the franchise tag. I mean, so they're really going for it, and if that bottoms out, that's a lot to be saddled with for like an inside linebacker position.
It's a lot. Like the one thing that I'm okay with, like with the three big ones, Crowder and Barr and Mosley. There was a very strong effort on the part of those teams to keep those players. And so the moves I always have an issue with are the ones where, like, why is that team letting him go? Like, why is that – like why is he on his way out? I think with these guys it's sort of explainable, right? Because you've got two off-ball linebackers in Mosley and Barr, and the linebacker number is based on pass rushers, right? So those guys aren't tagged because the tag number is too high. Jameson Crowder is a slot receiver, right? Like, so slot receivers would be tagged at the number outside receivers tagged at. So the numbers are really high at those positions to tag those guys. And the Redskins tried to keep Crowder. The Vikings made a real effort, and I'm not sure it's ended, to keep Anthony Barr. And the Ravens have made an effort to keep CJ Mosley. So at least that part of it, like, they overpaid, like, right? Like, because you that's what you do on the free agent market. They overpaid, no question about it. But I at least like the idea that the teams that had those players really made an effort to keep them.
Yeah, they're not like, you know, they're all both linebackers are like incredibly impactful players.
Right.
So like I sort of didn't hate the move, even though the price tag is immense. I mean, the going rate for every player is just going up so much, so that, you know, it of course stands out as being this like giant contract. And maybe they'll come to regret it, but you know, those are two really good players who will instantly make the defense better. And I don't think they don't have like red flags or anything.
And so it's here. The Vikings have agreed to terms with Anthony Barr.
Oh, wow.
That is off the table now. Confidence is important. And sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of the Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. They understand the emotions you're feeling and know the questions you have. Hair Club is the leader in total hair solutions with a legacy of success for over 40 years. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair, to learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best. See for yourself how powerful great hair can be. Again, we didn't bring in Connor to give his real life experience. I don't have this problem, but I have friends who have had this issue, that have had to go to the shaved head, that have had to do creative things to get around the fact that they're balding. It's enormous. It's enormous for my friends who have taken this sort of action. So you should take this sort of action, and I want to help you out because I have sympathy for you, even though I'm not in the same position as you. You can go to hairclub.com/Breer today for a free hair analysis and a free take-home hair care kit, all valued at over $300. That's hairclub.com/Breer for a free hair analysis and a free hair care kit. One more time, that's my last name on the end, hairclub.com/Breer. Experience your hair and your life at its best only with Hair Club. I'm certain that you'll love the club. All right, so we're going to pick that right back up. Yeah, that was interesting. So what I was alluding to earlier when I think I said we'll see on Barr or whatever, Anthony Barr backed out of the deal with the Jets. He's signing with the Vikings. I'm told it's going to be at about $13.5 million. Yeah, so not great for the New York Jets, guys, and I guess that's sort of what happens when you record a podcast in the middle of free agency.
We were just talking about how their teams they came from really wanted them, really, really wanted them.
Yeah. So the Vikings clearly really wanted Anthony Barr. Anthony Barr wanted to stay in Minnesota. I think as much as anything else, it's one of those where, and this is sort of, I mean, look, I think that this is sort of what the tampering period is there for, right? Like, it's so guys don't have to rush decisions. And I'm sure Anthony Barr is going to get crushed for this, but he shouldn't, because this is sort of the idea of it, is like, you can't make a deal as official, so guys have time to mull things over and look at it and say, okay. So, I mean, it opens the door for more guys to do this too, right? Like, if you're another guy and you had second thoughts, maybe this kind of gives you cover if you want to change your mind.
Yeah, and I think that anybody, you know, that's saying anything, you know, I hate to get preachy here but on Anthony Barr, is, you know, think about your own life and think about your own job. I mean, these are guys that are deciding where they want to work, where they want to live, where they want their kids to go to school, you know, where they want their families to grow up for at least, you know, 2 or 3 years or whatever it is. You know, people have backed out of job offers in all walks of life before, you know, so I think it's not that big of a deal. Good for him. If he wants to stay in Minnesota, that's great.
Yep.
He's closer to Pizzeria Lola in the Fulton Brewery.
Yeah. So good for him. Good for him. Okay. Jenny, or is it me?
I think I've read the last two. I mean, I'm happy.
You read the last
read
two? Well, then Connor, I thought you read one, Connor. We're all out of sorts here. I'll take it. News topic number four. The safety market exploded on Monday with new Redskin Landon Collins and new chief Tyrann Mathieu agreeing to deals worth $14 million per year. I think this is another example of, again, good players getting to the market and bidding getting out of control. Like, I think Mathieu and Collins are, Collins to me, that was a little bit more out of left field. But Mathieu, I think, is a really good player who is a 21st century safety who can do a lot of different things. Who, you know, when a player like that gets to the market, there's going to be bidders.
I mean, a year ago, the discussion when Eric Reed was on the market was that the safety market was depressed. So, and people were talking about, is it because of the position or blah, blah, blah. So I think, you know, we can sort of put that conversation to bed, right? The safety market is robust, and there were clearly other reasons at play.
Yes.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, well, you have like last year, who do we have?
Kenny Vaccaro.
Kenny Vaccaro was out there. Trey Boston was out there. So it wasn't the same names, but yeah, I like
it wasn't. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. You know, right. It's not apples to apples, but
right.
What I thought was, you know, my thought process initially went from like when Landon Collins signed, it's like, okay, is this a similar example to sort of when the Rams signed Todd Gurley, and that you're paying him essentially to play two positions, because he did play a lot of linebacker when he's with the Giants. He can do that kind of that Patrick Chung kind of everything role in the Giants defense, and he's going to be able to do that in Washington. And it's like almost you're looking at him like a linebacker and a safety. And
Mark Barron type.
A Mark Barron type. So maybe you have to pay a little bit more a premium for that. But then all of a sudden when the Matthew deal came down, and then, you know, it just seems like that's the going rate this offseason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those where, you know, and I think it's like the Collins deal, like kind of like lifts all boats, where it's like, maybe players are willing to be a little bit more patient, right? Like in those situations where normally there'd be this land rush to get deals done because there's only so much cap space and this team's pushing me to do it. And so if I don't do it, the deal's going to come off the table. Whereas like when someone like Landon Collins gets that deal, and I think Landon Collins is a fine player, but I don't think he's as good as Matthew. I don't think he's as good as Earl Thomas. It probably causes players to say, well, wait a second. Like, if he's getting that much, how much am I worth? And maybe it's another reason for guys to slow play it through the negotiating period.
Yeah. No, and it's good for Earl Thomas, man. This is going to be a nice little offseason for him.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. All right. News topic number 5. Connor, Jenny, whoever wants to take it.
See,
we're all over the place.
I'm just going to – just a little criticism here. We have a group-specific chat with emojis in the title where we send the scripts. And this was not sent to the proper
– It wasn't?
No.
This is the second time today Connor has scolded someone for this.
When we make these things, it's so that this is the official home of all of our communication. That being said, I'll let you slide. I know it's a busy, you know, busy week.
You know, next week we'll try to get back on track.
Yeah, everyone's try to get better. The Ravens and the Packers moved in opposite directions over the last week, with Baltimore losing Mosley, Za'Darius Smith, Eric Weddle, and Terrell Suggs on defense, and Green Bay adding Smith and Adrian Amos to their defense. Baltimore is fascinating to me. This is a team that has looked largely the same, really going back to 2000.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is two decades of, you know, kind of similar structure, similar ideas, and you know, now with Suggs going to Arizona, this will be the first time ever that they haven't played in a defense without Ray Lewis or Terrell Suggs.
It's really weird too, because it's like they rebuilt everything last year around like, and we did. I think Klemko did a story on it, just the communication and empowering players, and so much of it was on based on how like they had the older veterans, Suggs up front and Mosley at linebacker and Weddle at safety, and now all those guys are gone. So now are you just starting from zero? You know, like that's the part of it that's like, I don't know. From the Ravens' perspective, it's like they really are turning the page, and they've got a new general manager and they've got a new quarterback, and it'll be interesting to see where they go from here, because I think part of this is probably about cleaning up the cap, like, right? Because they had those big deals that had forced them to say goodbye to some good players over the years. But those aren't, I mean, these aren't like peripheral pieces. Like CJ Mosley and Eric Weddle were not peripheral pieces last year. Those were like important pieces to who they were.
And like very central to them getting into the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, they had the number one defense. Yep. That's basically, you know, their formula for winning with a rookie quarterback was, you know, strong ground game and a good defense. And now you've, you know, it really, you know, taken away a lot from the defensive side of the ball. So it's, you know, I don't know. It's definitely a time of transition for them, which I think is probably why there were the conversations and with Harbaugh, and you know, he didn't sign the deal right away. And you know, I think because he sort of, you know, understood that, or not understood, he knew this time of transition was coming, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's definitely. I mean, there's no question that it's different.
And I guess you still, if you do it now and you don't, like, if you don't get obsessed with that window, you still have time to probably come back and load up one more time before Lamar's done with his rookie contract, right?
Right.
I mean, I guess it gives you one more opportunity, maybe at the end of the 4-year window, to to layer expensive free agents if you want to do that,
right.
If that's the direction that you want to go.
Breaking news, apparently, that Bell is going to the Ravens from Akbar reporting it.
Akbar's reporting it, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
4-year, $86 million deal with the Ravens.
What timing?
$86 million? Is that? That is, I'm not questioning Akbar as a reporter, but that's $21.5 million a year.
That's right. I just pulled out the calculator to double check because I was stunned.
$21.5 million a year.
Did I read it right?
This is not Akbar's. This is a fake Akbar. Oh. Fake Akbar. No.
Let's just re-record.
Thank you, Ed Bouchette.
Got to retweet it to my timeline.
I'll tell you what. We have everything on this podcast. We have me acting distracted the whole freaking time, especially after the Anthony Barr thing. We have me stopping, and now we got a fake Twitter account. Like, this podcast is the perfect, perfect free agency podcast. Are we missing anything? We have fake Twitter accounts. We got distracted reporters. We've got a break in the action.
I pulled out my calculator because I was like, I must be doing the math wrong in my head. It's over $20 million a year. I don't understand.
That's quick work. Whoever did that, noticed what Akbar tweeted earlier?
So good. Oh, my God.
Noticed what Akbar tweeted earlier and then turned around and got the Steelers, legendary Steelers reporter to retweet him.
Oh, my gosh.
I cannot believe we were fleeced by a fake account of the host of American Ninja Warrior breaking Le'Veon Bell news. Try to digest that for a second.
Gosh, I'm so embarrassed.
That's unbelievable.
Happens to the best of us.
That's
wow. Day two, everyone. Free agency. Yeah.
I was going to talk about the Packers and how they're acting different with Ted Thompson gone and Brian. But
I want more fake Akbar
stuff. We should probably just wrap it up there. That was. We were going to talk, so the plan was to finish things off by talking about Le'Veon Bell as if he'd signed somewhere, right? That was our plan, what we think of him signing somewhere and, because it hadn't happened yet. And now, fake Akbar, did the work for us.
So I'm doing a little reporting here. And this fake Akbar account was registered in 2017.
Is this a long play?
Sort of a deep Russian sort of, disinformation campaign sort of thing. But... Yeah, so this might either be Akbar's secondary account, which he's trying to maybe develop over the course of this free agency, or it's just a totally insane person that loves Akbar and got this thing going.
And Michael Fabiano, the NFL Network's fantasy guy, is trying to kind of chum it up with fake Akbar here, right? Look at you, breaking news.
Fake Akbar seems to be a really
Connor,
big.
You see this?
My take on this is that I think that Bell should definitely take that $21.5 million a year. It seems like a pretty solid offer.
Shit.
Do you think? The 21.5 had to be a warning sign, right? I don't know. The Ravens walk away from C.J. Mosley at $16 million, only to spend $21.5 million per on.
So, the theory then is that the fake Akbar account is Le'Veon's ghost Twitter, which he's using to spell out the contractual demands for the teams that are theoretically in the running for him.
This is even better than the blonde mustache plan.
We've reached the end of humanity.
I think that...
Maybe inspired by the blonde mustache.
I would like to read a deep dive into Brown and Bell's strategy because I think it goes a lot deeper than people might realize. It's not just an emoji here and there.
The blonde mustache was like a trial balloon, and when it worked, Bell went all in on fake Akbar.
There are fake Akbar tweets. I'm not even joking. Fake Akbar tweets from 2018. We're looking good in the Wildcat offense. Stuff that he might say. Actually say.
We're looking good in the Wildcat.
I think fake Akbar is going to officially be the fourth co-host in this podcast.
we've created a new character.
Fake Akbar generating more news than Connor ordering.
Does fake Akbar have any other good tweets there, Connor?
So his first tweet was from Christmas Eve of 2018. The account was registered in 2017. First tweet, Christmas Eve 2018. a retweet of Tony Jefferson saying something about end zone celebrations. So,
wow.
But a lot of Ravens heavy tweets that I've noticed just scrolling through his timeline. So this could
He took it down. Did he take it?
It's deleted. Maybe his tweet is his account.
I'm going to screenshot all this then, you know.
His account may have been suspended, but it does appear like Akbar is a Baltimore-based
How is Akbar's account fake? Akbar's account's already suspended.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
We have witnessed the birth and death of one of the greatest fake Twitter accounts. In the history of social media.
I think that has to be
Connor,
one of
you
the
still
more...
in it? Connor, you have to stay in it. Because,
yeah, I got to screenshot all this.
You're still in it.
I've got access to it.
We may not see fake Akbar again.
Oh, God, there's some good ones here. Okay, we're going to post all this stuff at some point.
Rest in peace, fake Akbar.
R.I.P.
Fake Akbar was willing to give Le'Veon Bell what he wanted.
12/27/2018, Gus Edwards getting no respect. Why would the host of American Ninja Warrior be talking about Gus Edwards?
Well, wait a second. So Gus Edwards wasn't getting enough respect, but now fake Akbar is replacing him with Le'Veon Bell at $21.5 million per.
Also, the day after Christmas, 2018, retweeting Pro Football Focus, I find it hard to believe that the Ravens didn't have a single player who earned a spot on your team of the week.
Wow.
What is the fuck is going on?
Beep.
This is the greatest account. Are we still going?
Yeah, we are still going.
Sorry. Beep.
We should probably wrap it up there.
Beep at 55 minutes. Sorry.
I'm going to jump into the six pack in a second here. But shout out to Fake Akbar because you just completely made this podcast. We appreciate Fake Akbar coming out for the last 5-10 minutes. Outstanding. Here's real Akbar's account. Does he have anything up? Wait, so this must have been... All right, so real... That actually was real Akbar, right?
That,
real Akbar did tweet
was,
3 hours ago. So is this just someone taking their own Twitter account and like seeing what Akbar tweeted, then making fake Akbar? And was that what happened?
Just be on the lookout for my 10,000-word deep dive on fake Akbar coming... Yeah.
Coming soon to a website near you.
All right, guys. Okay, we're going to jump into the six pack now. You guys know how this works. Everything's fluid this week, but still wanted to answer your questions. Every week on Twitter on Tuesdays, I put out the call for questions. You ask, I pick six questions, I answer them. If I pick yours, you get an answer right here on the pod. Plus, I give you a like. I hit that little heart on the Twitter machine. Question number one is from Josh Abbott. This is at Josh_49Spurs. Why do you think Earl Thomas wasn't immediately signed, and where do you think he eventually lands? Please say San Francisco. I do think the Niners would be in the mix. I think the reason he wasn't immediately signed were because of his salary demands. He wanted $15 million per year, which seemed crazy at the outset. Looks a lot less crazy now that Tyrann Mathieu and Landon Collins have gotten $14 million per apiece. And so I think this has nothing to do with him as a player. I don't think he's the great player that he was, but I think that he's still a very, very good player, a good player worth a big contract. I think this, as much as anything else, this has to do with the fact that he came into the market high. And, you know, now you're at the point where you're comparing him with younger players who might be more viable options down the road. And so can he get to 15? I'm not sure, but I think that's a big reason why he's still out there. Question number two from Fred Avery II. That's at El Camino Fred. Question, does Kyler Murray go number one overall to Arizona? This isn't a report, but I would say right now, yes, I think that he goes number one to Arizona. The biggest reason why would be the buy-in from the coach. Look, they took a big swing on Cliff Kingsbury. Hiring Cliff Kingsbury after he was fired, that's a big swing. You know, you're taking a risk. And I do think Cliff's got a good offensive mind, and he's very good at quarterbacks, but it's a risk. If you're going to take that sort of risk, you got to be all in on your risk. And if you're going to be all in on your risk, then if Cliff Kingsbury comes to you and says, Kyler Murray is my guy, Kyler Murray can make my offense fly, then you got to go with Kyler Murray. And so I think that they'll eventually get to that point. I don't think they've made the decision yet. But I do think that a piece of this is going to be Cliff Kingsbury's feeling on the quarterback. And if Cliff Kingsbury's willing to sell the quarterback hard and just reading the tea leaves, and look, Cliff Kingsbury's worked with a lot of different types of quarterbacks, from Davis Webb to Baker Mayfield to Johnny Manziel to Patrick Mahomes. So I don't know that he's got a specific type. I think he can work with different types. But when I asked Lincoln Riley about this a couple weeks ago, and Lincoln Riley played with Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech, he coached against Cliff Kingsbury for the last 4 years in the Big 12. Lincoln told me that Kyler Murray is a perfect fit for Cliff Kingsbury's offense. And so my guess right now would be Kyler Murray will be the first overall pick. Question number three from Mick Naw. That's at Nick Maw 91. What does Ryan Pace have up his sleeve with the cap space he has cleared all of a sudden? I can tell you right now, and I may look stupid for saying this in 12 hours. I don't know. I don't think it's Le'Veon Bell. At least that's the feeling that I've gotten from people in that building, that Le'Veon Bell is not on their radar. I think clearing the cap space does help you from a draft perspective. Obviously, you need that space to sign your draft picks. I also think that there's a chance that maybe they bring in some help at the wide receiver position. Question number four is from Garen Abernathy. That's at my own person 44. If the Chiefs leave the draft with a starting corner and a guy that can challenge for an edge spot on defense, have they solidified things on that side of the ball? Well, Garen, I'll tell you, if they're going to do that, the way to do it would probably be to go with an edge player in the first round and then maybe a corner in the second or third round. They may wind up with an additional second-round pick if they can move Dee Ford after the free agency period. The Packers would be out right now on Dee Ford, but the Niners might still be in on him. So if you can get a two for Dee Ford, maybe, if you can get a second-round pick for Dee Ford, maybe you're looking at drafting an edge player in the first round and maybe a corner or two on the Friday of the draft. And I don't think that means they solidified things in that side of the ball, but I do think it means they're moving in the right direction. Of course, then replacing Dee Ford will be an issue. Question number five from John Hunton. That's at JH_Hunton. The Steelers have now lost Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. They also have major needs at linebacker and corner. Which side of the ball is more prudent to address in free agency and the draft? I think the Steelers still need to address the defense. I actually think they're okay when it comes to the receiver and running back positions. James Conner was great last year. You didn't have Bell last year. I think they can make it work with Jalen Samuels and James Conner as your lead guy. And at receiver, they've just had such a great history of drafting and developing guys. Juju Smith-Schuster, I think, is ready to be your number one. James Washington, who was a draft pick last year, could wind up being the next Kevin Colbert find. I think they're going to be fine on offense. And that's taking nothing away from Brown and Bell as players. They were without Bell last year, and they've just shown such an ability to develop, to identify and develop receivers. If I'm them, I'm still focusing on finding a way to fix the defense. And then finally, question number six from Kevin Fairley. That's at KFairley21. Will there be a market for the Jets to trade back from the number three pick? If Kyler Murray goes first overall, I believe there will be, yes. Because I think then Nick Bosa goes number two to the Niners. And then you have got a situation where teams that need a quarterback will probably look at the Raiders, maybe get a little antsy, and say to themselves, we need to get past the Oakland Raiders to get in position to get our guy. It's going to mean Dwayne Haskins having a solid pro day. It's going to mean Dwayne Haskins doing well in his visits. It's going to mean Dwayne Haskins doing well with the on-campus workouts. But if Dwayne Haskins can build some momentum here, and I think that started at the combine, and Kyler Murray goes first overall, I do think the Jets will have a market for that third overall pick, which would be a nice consolation prize to losing Anthony Barr on Tuesday. Appreciate you guys coming out. This was a little bit of a different podcast, but I love your feedback on how that went, because that was a little crazy. I'm glad that we could at least sort of illustrate what free agency is like for all of us. That gave you a little window into it. We always want your feedback. You can get me on Twitter at Albert Breer, on Facebook at Albert R. Breer, on Instagram at Albert_Breer. And always remember to listen to all of our podcasts. This time of year, it's just us in the Monday Morning Podcast featuring Gary Gramling and Andy Benoit. You can get us on one feed now, the MMQB NFL Podcast feed on Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Next week, same time. We'll see you guys then.